All right, everybody, welcome back to the Heath Barn. Let's get right into this. I had an episode that I did last night that I was planning on putting out, but the downloads on my Podbean had been screwing up and everything, so I just wasn't paying much attention to it. I was just going to gripe to Podbean again because it's happened once before. However, my buddy Nathan, shout out Nathan, got a hold of me, and I just thought I wasn't seeing any downloads coming in, but Podbean has screwed that up before, so I was just going to gripe to Podbean. I just hadn't done it yet. But apparently, the Brian Barnhart episode is not even available. You can't even click on it or listen to it on any of the podcasting formats for whatever reason. I have no idea why. But so after hearing that, what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to push back the episode I recorded last night, and I'm going to put out the Brian Barnhart episode again tonight. So, episode 112 is also going to be the Brian Barnhart episode, and hopefully this time it works, and if not, I will be getting a hold of Podbean and switching to a different server. So, which I'm probably going to do anyway, because like I said, the reason that I wasn't thinking anything was wrong is because they've screwed up in the past, and I just figured they were screwing up again, and that's why none of the downloads from the Barnhart episode were showing up, but apparently you can't even click on it. Spotify, it's not even on there. It just goes from episode 109 to 111. It's not even there. So I have no idea what the problem is, but I'm going to put it out again tonight so you can listen to it if you haven't yet. So, again, this is from February 29th. The voice of the Illini, Brian Barnhart. Thank you for listening. Hopefully it works this time. If it doesn't, I have no idea why. But thank you for listening, and hit it. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Heath Barn. In this episode, I am extremely, extremely excited. The voice of the Illini, Mr. Brian Barnhart, is here. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Yes, this is awesome. I have a lot of questions, but before we start, what'd you think of the game last night?
The game was one of the most unique ones I've seen in recent years. In fact, it turned out Illinois, it was the highest scoring, first time they'd have scored 100 points
yes.
in a Big Ten game in regulation in 30 years. That was the start.
Right.
I figured it was further back because I've been doing the games 22 years now. I don't remember anything in a Big Ten game in regulation.
Yeah,
We had a game at Rutgers that went three overtimes. That was
I think that was a Malcolm Hill game, wasn't anyone he had a lot.
Something like that.
Yes,
it was a very high-scoring game. Both teams were in the hundreds on that particular game.
Right.
But last night, for a Big Ten game in late February, that was unusual.
I agree. Yeah. I felt like – I'm trying to think. I saw something today, and I don't want to mess up the stat, but it was something along the lines of it was the first time a team had shot 70% from two, 60% from three, had five turnovers or less and lost, I think.
And lost by eight, yeah.
Right.
Minnesota, yeah.
Yeah. So, it was – and just before we get started, though, the fan hat for a second. I mean, I love this team a lot, but I feel like, they've got some stuff to tighten up defensively. But, just outscoring teams. Because I remember the Iowa game, people were saying – well, they looked a lot better defensively, and I was thinking, they still gave up 85, so there's some things to tighten up. But, I hadn't seen a game like that. I can't remember the last time. I mean, like I said, it was just an NBA score,
And really a low NBA score.
Right. These days, yes.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I feel like it's just kind of all going this direction.
Yeah.
Because the NBA is, with defensively with them as well. But well, I'll start here. I have seen you on other things, and we'll get through how you came, your life and starting out, things like that. But first of all, you said I saw where you lived in Tolono and grew up on a farm.
I did.
Yes.
Yeah, west of Tolono, 2 miles west. It was right there by the interstate, basically. Gotcha. It wasn't quite in our backyard, but it was fairly close.
Yeah.
Grew up on the farm there.
How were you on the farm?
Oh, it was fun. It was fun. Yeah, it was a lot of hard work, a lot of early mornings.
Yeah.
I think the work ethic you learn on a farm carries over in life a lot.
Definitely.
For sure. And, we didn't have a lot of money, but we made enough. You know, my dad made enough. He worked a couple of jobs. He farmed. He worked at night as a janitor at the University of Illinois. You know,
really?
He basically supported the family doing that. We had five kids total in the family. So, but it was, you know, hard work and dependability and show up on time and all those things you kind of learn being on a farm.
Yeah, my dad farmed as well. And I was more of a gopher. I had an older brother that was 4 years older than me, so he did. My dad never let me operate any machinery more than like a lawnmower, which was good.
Yeah.
But I was more of a gopher. But I don't know if I enjoyed it, but I never had interest in that being, you know, what I did or anything. I just wanted to play ball all the time and stuff like that. And dad was, that's what he wanted me to do. But I was fine. I mean, I did what I could, but. Borderline liability at times, I would say, just from kind of like what I was telling you with this technology. Same thing with like machinery, you know. But yeah, but we, my mom's first grade teacher, dad was a farmer, and that's how we, you know, and I got youngest of four and everything. So yeah, but so when you were there, I know you said you went to a bunch of Illinois games growing up and everything. I remember, you know, when you're young, I don't know if you had the same kind of feeling, but kind of similar to going to Cardinal games. I mean, I'm a Cardinal fan. Like growing up, when you first time you see the arch, when you're going down, when you're on 70, you know, it's same kind of thing when you're young and you see that big white bubble, you know, when you're pulling up, getting close to the stadium. I don't know if you felt that same way.
Sure.
But, do you have any memories, and not the obvious ones, you know, like Eddie Johnson, you know, like last second. Mm-hmm. Do you have any little like other kinds of memories that stick out? Going to the Assembly Hall. Now it's State Farm Center, obviously, but Assembly Hall when you were young.
Well, we had my dad had season tickets probably late 60s after the Assembly Hall had opened.
Yeah.
Started way up in C section a few rows, and he kept moving down. He eventually got into the second row of B.
Yeah.
On the north end, if you look at – you're running off the court in the tunnel at the north end to be up to the left slightly.
Yeah.
It's kind of where those – seats are now the special dining,
right? Yes,
I don't know what the club seating, I think they call it, or whatever it is. That's where we sat, and so we sat in those same seats for years,
right?
And we had two tickets. He had two tickets, and he would take one of us kids. We rotated. I, being the oldest, usually got the choice of which games I wanted to see.
Yeah,
and so I'd choose Indiana or Purdue or you know the games you wanted to see, and leave the. Uh-huh. The other ones to my brothers and sister, you know, to kind of choose from. So that way, I guess that was a perk of being the oldest. But
so you're the oldest of?
Five.
Really?
Yeah, the oldest of five.
Yeah.
And going to games, and there was Bob Wright, who was the old coach at one time, played at Illinois. Of course, John Wright and senior and junior. And then, of course, John Paddock, who had the touchdown passes this last year,
right?
Kind of that whole family, but the Wrights used to sit in front of us. I remember that, and I also remember that we would often not park in the paid parking lot. We'd park at the Hog Barns, which are where the research park is now, and we'd park down there and run to the games before and after the games. I remember running out from the Assembly Hall,
right,
in the cold,
yes,
with my dad to our car.
Yeah. I got lucky when I was little because one of my older sisters went to Shiloh. She played for Shiloh, and they made it to the Class A, like the high school girls made it to the Final Four all 4 years she was in high school. So she got to play 12 games at the Assembly Hall in high school, you know. So I, you know, very lucky to go there and just watch her growing up. And I also remember her coach. This was right in the thick of the Flying Illini. And I'm not sure if he gave me a guest pass or something. That part I don't remember, but he waved me down and let me go down in the locker room and see like the Illinois locker room, you know, with Anderson, you know. So I'm looking at Anderson and Battles locker and all those guys.
Yeah,
so it was really cool. But I do. It's a great place. I mean, I love it. But okay, so let's moving on here. So you said that you were a history major, correct?
I was.
And
yeah.
I know I saw something where you said you were shy and things like that.
Very
like
much so.
Up. Yeah. Yep. And I was kind of curious because I get that. And I also, is it something to where when you start doing something, just the more you do it, realize you're good at it, you gain your confidence, mm-hmm. and then the shyness just kind of goes away.
Yeah, no, that was entirely it. Part of it was at Liberty University, where I went to college.
Right.
I was a history major at the start.
Yeah.
And very introverted, very shy.
Yeah.
And the thing that appealed to me when I kind of got into radio, because I had a friend of mine who kind of got me into it, asked me to help him out. He was doing some games for the Liberty Women.
Yeah. One question about that real quick. You said that, okay, I can't remember what his name, but you said his goal was to call North Carolina, games for North Carolina.
That's right.
Okay, now what, where did he end up going with his?
He didn't wind up doing North Carolina because Woody Durham did those games for a long time. And his son, Wes, is a well-known sportscaster. And then there's another guy who's doing the Tar Heels now. In fact, when we played North Carolina in the championship game, Woody Durham was still doing the games.
Yes.
So that was, how many years later.
Right.
But he did. He did some TV work for the Liberty Flames Network. He did some other work for some regional sports networks in the South. But never did get to be the voice of the Tar Heels.
Yeah. So. Well, that's But so whenever you were when you first started doing it, I was going to talk about being shy too, because that's one where I think people need to understand that too. It's like, because there are a lot of people out there. Like, I even think of, not to talk about us, but like, good example. Like last night when I'm at home and my son's 7 years old, he's pretending he's plays for Illinois. He's playing the whole time. He's dancing. He's shooting. He's doing all this. But you get him around people and it's just nothing. So I worry about him. I mean, I'm not worried as a parent. I worry because it's like he's so young. I mean, he'll grow out of it. But I need to use you as an example because it's like he needs to understand that if you're good at something. If you got to let people know or they're never going to find out, So I was just wondering, so that took, how long did that take? Like, okay, let's say you start calling games at Liberty. How long do you really feel like it took before you felt completely over that and just, completely confident?
I would say within a couple of years.
Yeah.
I think the thing that helped me, the thing that attracted me to doing the radio was that I could be heard and not seen.
Right.
That was part of it.
That's one thing.
I never was really interested in TV because they see you.
Right.
Now, as it turned out, I did wind up doing some TV as my career went along. And it took a while, even after I'd done radio for a lot of years, to feel comfortable enough on TV.
Yeah.
Even though in a general sportscast of a game, you're not on TV more than a minute and a half or two. But it still took a little getting used to to do that. But, once I was able to get on and do it, and like you said earlier, I felt comfortable doing it. I got some confidence. Mm-hmm. I go, hey, you're pretty good at that.
Right.
And then it kind of grew from there. I had some other people that told me I wasn't very good at it.
Wow.
So that was a little discouraging at the start, but I had no concept of how long it might take to kind of figure out what you're doing and then do it well.
Do you have your first game you ever called?
First game? I don't know if I get the first game. I've got some early work on cassette tape.
Right.
From 40 years ago that is in a box somewhere.
If you listen to it now, would you think, I mean.
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't recognize it.
Right.
I had some of these a few years ago. I took out some of the tapes and was going through them and kind of reorganizing them. And my daughters, who are now in their 20s, but when they were little, younger, I would play that for them and they were like, "That's not you, Daddy.
Right.
That's not you at all." And it was like, well, I could see why, because it didn't sound anything like it. So,
Okay, I have questions, too, about one thing I did not know is if you want to give a brief explanation about how you got to this point, but how did you get to Anaheim? And then I got a couple questions about your time there, because that I had no idea that you did MLB games, and that's amazing. So,
Well, when I was at Liberty, I got into on the campus station.
Yeah.
And then there was a church, the church had a station there too on campus. So I did work for both.
Yeah.
Jerry Edwards was the guy that hired me. He was the play-by-play voice for the Liberty Flames for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It was an NAIA school at the time and pretty small.
Yeah.
And so you had lots of opportunities. If you wanted to get on the air, you just did it. Even if you were bad at it or you didn't know what you were doing, they were like, you know, go for it. So, so I was on there, and then I wound up graduating, I guess, in 86. Went to work for the Lynchburg Mets, which was a single A team for the New York Mets.
Okay, now that process, so that's you're just chucking stuff out to anybody, you know, just sending out your tapes and just seeing if what sticks. Pretty much.
Yeah, that was more a case of I had my buddy and I we had done some play by play. They wanted some students, a couple of students on. This is going back to the beginnings of cable TV, but. Cox Cable, I think it was in Lynchburg, needed a couple of student announcers to, you know, to do some, you know, some basketball for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the director of the department at Liberty said, "Well, I got a couple guys that'll do it." So, you know, no money at all, but they'll do it. And so, through that, the guy that produced those games for the cable company knew that I had done some play-by-play, and so then they were looking for with the Lynchburg Mets. They were looking for someone to be kind of a backup announcer. Yeah. They had hired another guy to do the play-by-play, and they wanted somebody to, like, A, run the board for the commercials, and B, to be on the radio broadcast when the other guy had to go do TV.
Right.
Because they had about 25 TV broadcasts. And I had done a few TV broadcasts, like my junior year in college, for them. So we kind of got – it was more of a – I got an opportunity with my friend Mike, and then they needed a baseball guy, and he wasn't interested in baseball that much.
Yeah.
So I did some on the cable TV, and then I also wound up the next year being hired by that same Class A team.
Gotcha.
Because they knew me.
I guess and I should backtrack a smidge. Mm-hmm. So is your – that was all baseball.
Right.
Okay. So were you calling – when did you start calling basketball? Did you call basketball at Liberty as well, or was it just all baseball? Or
was it basketball, women's games,
gotcha.
Some of those. I filled in a couple of times on the Liberty Flames network that Jerry Edwards did. I filled in a couple of men's games.
Did you always feel just comfortable? Was there a sport that you felt more comfortable calling right out of the gate, or was it just you're good with
– Probably I was good with any of them, but baseball was my initial – my initial first love, I guess, because I had done some work in Lynchburg with the single A team there on TV. And then, you know, doing the basketball I thought was something I could catch on to pretty quick. Football was – I didn't do any football till I really basically got out of college.
Yeah.
There was some a couple of high school teams. There's two big high schools there were at the time, E.C. Glass and Heritage High School.
Mm-hmm.
And E.C. Glass had one broadcaster, and I did the games for Heritage, which was the other – high school team in town, but I hadn't really done any high school football before of any kind, and so I did that right after college just to make some money, you know, right after I graduated.
Well, you wouldn't be able to tell what you do it now, but
I had no clue what I was. I had no clue what I was doing.
Yeah, but as long as they don't know,
that's right.
So did you? Okay, so then let's talk about how you got to Anaheim.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
well, I went from Lynchburg, then the single A team for the Mets, and then the. There was a single-A team in Roanoke, Virginia, in Salem, which was the Pirates single-A team that they hadn't had a radio broadcast before. Yeah. And there being an hour from Lynchburg, they knew the staff, the general manager at Lynchburg, and they said, "Hey, do you know anybody that we could hire to start our radio broadcast?" And they said, "Yeah, we got a backup guy here." So I went and interviewed for it, and I got it.
Yeah.
So then I was there for a year. And in the meantime, I sent out, and we won the league championship that year, which was a lot of fun.
Right. And they get to hear you calling.
Right.
Making important calls and things like that.
And so 140 games and, you know, doing the games every night. Most nights I was by myself. Some nights I had a color guy who was with me, who's Dan Bonner, who was on CBS with the March Madness games.
He still does it.
Yeah, he was he lived in Virginia, and he was hired by them to work with me, too, on some of the games. So we would trade off innings or, you know. And so – I got to know Dan that way, and we're still friends to this day. So that's a lot of fun, and he's been doing a lot of CBS games. Then I sent out a bunch of tapes to different teams, and I got a little nibble from Oklahoma City, the AAA team for the Rangers. I didn't know they were looking, but I got a nibble, and they said, "Hey, come on out for an interview."
Yeah.
And I got interviewed, and I got the job.
That's awesome.
And so I wound up moving to Oklahoma City in 1988.
88 is when that was.
Yeah. And then I worked for them for the next 8 years. I was a play-by-play. I did work. I did some media relations for them. I did a little bit of everything.
Huh.
But I only worked from April to September, and then I had to figure out something else to do each year, and I was year to year, basically.
Yeah.
You know, no benefits, no contract, nothing.
that's how, okay.
Yeah. And so I did, but I did that for about eight, in the meantime, it was about 8 or 9 years, interviewed for some other jobs along the way and didn't get those. And so then worked with Oklahoma City until 1994. The guy that owned the team at the time was a guy named Jeffrey Loria, mm-hmm. who wound up owning the Miami Marlins. Florida Marlins at the time. They won a World Series with him. So
they'd win one, then they'd rebuild.
I know.
Yeah.
They'd tear it down, they'd build it back up. Mm-hmm. But he was our boss. He owned the team in Oklahoma City, so I worked for him for a few years down there, so I got to know him. I'd send out tapes. In the off season, I would do minor league hockey. There was a minor league hockey team in Oklahoma City.
What was that like?
It was really fast. fast.
Yeah.
So I did that. I was a backup announcer on that, so I got to travel all over the, they had teams in Little Rock, Arkansas, and Memphis, and Dallas, Texas, and a couple of teams, one team in Fort Worth, and Wichita, I think, had a team. And so you'd bus everywhere, and you'd do hockey games.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fun. I did small college basketball in NAI level, Oklahoma Baptist, which was in Shawnee, Oklahoma, about an hour from Oklahoma City. And I did their games for a few years mm-hmm. in the off season. I did high school football in Shawnee, Oklahoma, play by play in color. So I did a lot of. I had to. I had no choice. I had no other income.
Right.
And so I was scraping together, $25 a game here, $50 a game there.
Huh. Yeah.
I did that, and then I'd go back to the baseball every year.
Right.
And then I continued to send out tapes. I've got a stack at home. Couple inches thick of, hey, thank you for your interest. Mm-hmm. You sound good. We don't have an opening.
Right.
I even sent some here to Illinois.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. And I knew, of course, I'd grown up with Jim Turpin.
Right.
Who did the games for many years, and Larry Stewart before that, if you go back far enough.
Yeah.
And so I had sent a tape, and they, obviously our positions failed. And so I just poked around different things. And then I wound up getting two interviews in the fall of 97. I had sent out some basketball tapes, and I got a response from the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah,
they called me down for an interview, and I was like runner up there. And then I got an interview with the Texas Rangers.
Yeah,
for baseball, and I got an interview there, and I didn't get either job, but I was close.
Right.
And the managing partner of the Rangers, who I interviewed with, he said, "Just keep plugging away. You're gonna get a job
because
your stuff's good enough."
Right.
Which is a good
kids need to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Just keep plugging away. He said,
right.
You're going to do something. And then, I'd sent out a tape to Anaheim. I'd actually forgotten anything about sending it out there. I just sent them everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
And all of a sudden, about a week after the Super Bowl in 1998, I get a call saying, "Hey, this is so-and-so with the Angels. We got your tape. We love it. We'd like you to come out for an interview."
That's great.
And, went out for an interview and, interesting story there is I went out and interviewed with the guy, the general manager of the team or whoever it was that was doing the hiring. At the time I was out there, there was what they called an Angels fan fest, like a Sox fest. And so there's all these
Cardinals got like the winter warm-up.
Yeah. So we're going around, and at this place there is a there's a little truck, a TV truck or a little area where you can do play-by-play of a great catch.
Mm-hmm.
By Jim Edmonds, as it turned out.
That's a question I have right here, but go ahead. Yeah.
Well, so it's a play Jim Edmonds made with the Angels when I think it was against Kansas City. And so
I was going to ask you if you made that call or not, the one where he's over his head.
Over his head.
Yeah.
I did not make that. I obviously didn't call
it. Was
it
the year before you were there, probably? Probably missed by a year or two.
It might have occurred a year or two earlier.
Yeah.
But anyway, what they did was they would have fans come in and you could record yourself mm-hmm. calling the play, and then they would give you a copy of the recording.
Right.
So the guy said that I was with, he was interviewing me, said, "Well, go in and just show us what you got." And of course, all these people have no clue that I'm on an interview, or they have no clue, whatever. So I go in there and I just call it like I see it,
mm-hmm.
Whatever it was. And I come out, and the guy looked at one of the other bosses that was there who was doing the hiring as well, mm-hmm. and he goes, "Hire him."
That's awesome.
Because they heard it. And so that's...
So you did get to make that call.
I did get to make that call.
The call got you hired in a way.
Right. Yeah, it did.
Wow. That's...
Yeah.
Because that was one of my questions I was going to ask the years you were there, and I was going to see if Edmonds was there when you were...
Yeah, he was playing there.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he got traded, I think, in 2000, I believe.
Yeah. So he was there. Darren Erstad was there.
Anderson and Salmon and all that.
Garrett Anderson, Tim Salmon. They had a really good team.
Yeah.
But I got hired. We went to spring training in the spring of 98, and then I was there for 98 and 99.
I'm sure all the hustle and bustle and traffic's just like it is here in East Central Illinois.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine.
That's a whole different world out there.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
What was that like, though? I mean, was it a big – how much of a shock was that, like, as far as just – because people don't
think – for a small-town guy, it was –
people don't think about these athletes, too. It's another thing, just – getting around, you know, just the day-to-day, you know, and having to get to the stadium and get everywhere. Like, I know that I've been out there. I lived in Florida for a few years, and that's a whole other level from here. But L.A. is a whole other level from Florida, so I can't – I can't imagine getting used to that.
Yeah, fortunately, when I was out there, most of the games were at night. And so I would go into work about every day for the start of batting practice about 3.
Mm-hmm.
And so there weren't a lot of people on the – there weren't people heading the direction I was heading
right,
at
yeah.
3 o'clock. I was going against the traffic.
Yeah.
And then by the time the game was over,
yeah,
it was 11 o'clock at night or 11:30, depending on the start time, and there was hardly – there wasn't a lot of traffic either. So I avoided the day-to-day grinder of trying to go to work every day through traffic.
Right.
I had the benefit of working against the schedule. But that was that was a wonderful experience. There was a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I'm
sure.
Who was in the booth with you?
A guy named Mario Mpemba was with me. We had 2 play-by-play guys. We didn't have a color guy.
Oh,
so we would each do the first year. He did.
Well, I guess best radio is usually like that. I guess.
Yeah, so. he did 6 innings, and I did 3.
Yeah,
and in Los Angeles, it was a little unique because. Vin Scully, of course, doing the Dodgers for many years, did the games by himself.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, later he had some other guys come in. Charlie
Steiner.
Steiner came in. Rick Monday was there. But for a lot of years, he would do the games alone.
Yeah.
And so the Angels kind of copied that in that there wouldn't be any, like right now, me and Dion, we interact on the air all the time. Mm-hmm. Or me and Martin O'Donnell over the years interacted over the air. They didn't want us interacting over the air. It was basically Mario did his innings,
right.
And I did mine.
Yeah.
Well, the next year they changed that, where we were both kind of each other's color guy. It was kind of a 2-man team.
Gotcha.
But we didn't have a Major League Baseball player or a former player in there with us.
Right.
And so I think that was the reason after a couple of years they were like, okay, we want to try something else because we've got 2 play-by-play guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of the junior member of that of that group, and so I got let go.
Yeah.
You know, hey, we love your work. We'll do anything for you, but
we're
going a different direction.
I'm like,
okay. But those 2 years were, you know, doing games at Yankee Stadium and Fenway Park. And
Is there a you got a story or a call? Okay, one thing, too, before I get to that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when you're calling baseball, do you have were you a guy that had, like – because, you know, football, basketball, it's more instincts because it's going faster.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball, did you ever have any, not like calls, like this is my home run call, this is this call, this mm-hmm. is, or whatever. Or because, you know, you have more time to think of things, I guess, mm-hmm. in baseball rather than using your instincts. Did you have things like that, or did you just call what you saw? Or
well, baseball, you do a lot more prep, storytelling, recapping.
Yeah.
Discussing issues of the day when it comes to Major League Baseball or mm-hmm. games, you know, things around baseball.
Yeah.
It's more of a...
I do that, too. I try to sync up John Rooney a lot of times with the Cardinal games, you know, things, too.
Yeah, it's more of a conversation. Yeah. Now, the game is speeded up now a little bit because,
you
know, with the pitch clock and everything, so you don't have as much of that. But
on the way here, we were listening to the Cardinals. I was trying to explain to my wife. Somebody was... there was a guy on first, and they tried to... They threw over twice, and Rooney... explain how you know, you only get one more throw over there now.
Yeah.
Gets into change rules. So I was trying to explain that to her, and that was kind of a mess. She didn't quite pick up. So, but yeah, I don't, you know, them speed up the game, that's a whole other
conversation. But there's much more of a, you know, here's the wind, the stretch, and the pitch. It's high, ball one.
Right. And then a
okay, now filler, now what? Yeah,
just you kind know. Of shoot the breeze a little
and
bit.
And then, too. You know, hey, in his last start, so-and-so threw 6 2/3 innings. And,
yeah.
You know, there's just a lot of stuff you can throw in there. And here's the wind and the 1-1 pitch.
Right.
Little outside ball, too. Or, yeah. You know, here's a throw to first, runner back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so you're weaving the – you're sitting there having a conversation with a listener, basically, and you're weaving in action as you go.
Yeah, right.
So there's – you know, and I think it helps me in my basketball or football play-by-play because I know that, especially with baseball, people are tuning in and out.
Yeah.
Like you were listening to the Cardinal game, you're probably going to do this and you go back and listen to it again.
Yeah.
So you've missed maybe 2 or 3 innings
right.
while you've been doing this, and then it's John Rooney's job or whoever's doing it to kind of recap for
yeah.
you as to, okay, so that when you get back in your car, where are we?
Mm-hmm.
Who's ahead? And so I do that a lot, I think, in basketball and football just because there's more scoring,
yeah.
especially basketball, especially last night.
Yes.
But I think it's people – you got to remember that people aren't, like, glued to every word you're saying
yeah.
for 3 hours.
Gotta keep on
you've got to just kind of keep – hey, if you've just joined us,
yeah.
you know, this happened. Illinois was down by 5 at the 10-minute mark. They went on a 15-2 run. They've grabbed
right.
the lead. Just kind of give a shorthand –
with radio.
Here's
with,
where we are.
With radio, there's a lot more.
And radio, there's
recapping.
A lot more chance to
yeah.
do that. TV, they can.
Right.
TV's a different animal. We can talk about that. But yeah. but basically, the 2 years in Anaheim were fantastic. I enjoyed the experience immensely.
Mm-hmm.
I did realize how much pressure there is and how everybody wants that job. I
yeah.
did learn
oh, yeah.
that. And that was a little shocking to me. Somebody had told me about that. That
well, that's why you should feel you know. So good. About, I mean, you actually doing it. I mean, that's just it's crazy. There's
yeah.
those jobs don't grow on trees, you know.
Right.
So to be able to do
yeah.
that for, a couple
I had
years.
The sense there were some. I think when I showed up in Anaheim, and I'd been in Oklahoma City, and here I am, this little, you know, farm kid from in Tolono, Illinois.
Yeah.
It's like, well, who's that?
Yeah.
Where'd they get this guy?
Yeah, but once you
know,
start doing it,
yeah, and people would say, yeah. you know, hey, you're doing a good job. But there were a lot of people too that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure in a market that size, you're
right.
like, well, you know, where do we get, you know, where do we find this guy?
Yeah.
You know, and, oh, he does a good job, but, you know, I could do it better. You
right.
know, there's just, there was much more of that than I anticipated.
The guy and, that you were in the booth with, that name didn't ring a bell, just, mm-hmm. was he, how long was he their play-by-play guy? Like,
he was there from, yeah, 95 to about, I don't know if it was 01
yeah.
or 02. He left and went on to be the TV voice for the Tigers.
Oh, gotcha.
For Detroit for many years. And then he got let go from that job. And then the last, I think, 5 years, Matt Shepard did it. And now Jason Benetti's taken over.
Yeah.
So he was a couple of guys before Jason Benetti in Detroit. He was a really good announcer. Solid guy. Became a good friend.
Yeah.
But, you know, we spent a lot of time together.
Right.
For sure.
Okay, so now we get to after Anaheim. You can briefly tell everybody what brought you back here, and then we can start.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can start getting the fun Illinois stuff.
Okay. Well, after Anaheim, they told me my contract wasn't renewed. The guy in Oklahoma City that owned the at the time owned the Montreal Expos, who
yeah.
are now the Washington Nationals, of course. He had told me. Over the years, that if I ever need an announcer, if you're ever available, I'll hire you where I'm at.
Yeah.
Because his goal was to own a major league team, and my goal was to get to the big league. So,
right.
and he liked my work in Oklahoma City, so I called him right after the Angels let me go, and I said, "Hey, I'm available." And he said, "I'll hire you."
Yeah.
So he was going to hire me in Montreal. He had just taken over the ownership of the team. And one of the things he wanted to change, because the Expos were struggling at the time, which is why they wound up moving to,
right.
to Washington.
Yeah. yeah.
Because they just attendance was way down. There wasn't a ton of interest.
Around 2000. Yeah, so all the
– Yeah.
Walker, Grissom, all those guys are long gone.
They were long gone.
Yeah.
And so what had been happening is the team, the Montreal Expos, were paying the radio station to mm-hmm. be on the air.
Oh,
a certain
gotcha.
Amount of money. And they had a French broadcast and an English broadcast, because heavily French up there, too.
Yeah.
And he said, well, what I'm trying to do, he told me, is I'm trying to get the radio stations to pay me, not the other way around.
It's not the best.
And so they got into a dispute,
yeah.
a fight, and the radio station was like, we're not doing that. Why
yeah.
should we pay you, you know?
Uh-huh.
And so as it turned out, the job kind of fell through because he was in a legal argument with them.
Uh-huh.
And he told me, called me one time, he said, you're going to have to probably look for something else.
Yeah.
So I moved back here to Champaign because I didn't want to really live in California.
Yeah.
I had two young daughters, and I didn't want to stay out there.
Right.
And try to make it in expensive California. So yeah. I'll come home here and I'll look for work here. And so as it turned out, I applied. I thought, well, I filled out an application at the News Gazette downtown.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And turned it in, thinking, well, I could at least deliver the paper for a while or something, mm-hmm. you know, until I get back on my feet a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I got a call the next day from Stevie J, who was working here at WDWS and was the general manager by then.
So he was here before 93.
He was here, yeah. He'd worked at WLRW in town, and then he moved to WDWS, had been on the air for a long time, and worked his way up, and then he was the general manager. And they were going through a lot of changes. Jim Turpin had retired as the general manager. They went through a handful of GMs, and then they hired Stevie.
So Jim Turpin not only called Illinois, he was the general manager.
The GM of the – which I can't even imagine doing.
Yeah, I didn't know
being the GM of
that,
a radio station and doing the games and doing the Penny for Your Thoughts show.
Yeah.
He did all of that. And so Stevie said, well, you know, I don't have anything right now, but you're hired.
Yeah,
and I thought, okay, well, what does that mean?
Kind of a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, and so then he hired me to do some part-time work for him at WDWS, and then he added me to the morning show on the WDWS, mm-hmm. and he said, do you want to read news? And I was like, well, I guess I can read news. I haven't read any news on the air since college, but sure, I'll do that.
Yeah.
So I got started that way. I was part of the morning show for several years with him, and got on the air with Mike Hale as well on the Light Rock side, but anyway, in those early years, I was on the air with Stevie for a couple of years, and then Jim Turpin was about to retire, and then he retired in 2002.
Yep.
And the folks at the University of Illinois, Ron Gunther and those folks, approached me and said, hey, would you be interested in being our new play-by-play guy? And I was like, well, absolutely.
That's awesome.
You know, I had thought about coming here. I didn't think the job would ever be open, frankly.
Yeah.
Jim had done it forever, and I wasn't going to be here anyway, and it didn't really matter.
Right.
But then when I was here and working at the station where the games are on, I thought, well, let's do it. So,
absolutely.
I mean, I wasn't going to turn that down for sure. So
got here at a good time, too, with team-wise success. You had – who was it? It was Bardo first. Is that who you were paired up with basketball? And then And then Jerry Hester.
Yeah, started with Stephen Bardo. Stephen had just come on to start working with Jim Turpin.
Yeah.
And Lauren Tate had been with Jim for many years.
Right.
And Lauren was starting to get out of it, or, you know, they wanted to make do something different there. So they kind of kept Lauren on as a pre-game or halftime, post-game guest kind of thing. And then they hired Stephen Bardo.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Jim retired, then I took over, and I still had Stephen with me.
Right.
And then Lauren Tate as well.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a three-man team in a way.
Right.
And so we were all there, you know, 02, Bill Self, you know, start of the Bruce Weber era, the 04, 05. And then Stephen was starting to do a lot of he had been hired up at CBS Channel 2 in Chicago, did some sports up there. And then he started doing a lot of ESPN games.
Yeah.
And then it became apparent that he just couldn't commit.
Right.
Full time to Illinois, mm-hmm. so that we hired Jerry Hester then to take his place.
Yeah.
That was about 06, I think, 06, 07.
I got to talk about Hester too here in a little bit because I have a little story about him. But one thing I was going to ask too with football, you're going to have a new partner here this upcoming season.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of curious the process of breaking in a new partner, like what the challenges are, how you prepare, you know, with a new partner, things like that, mm-hmm. the process that goes into getting ready, get your chemistry down as much as you can mm-hmm. before the game start and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, because that'll be happening here, right? So,
yeah. Well, I started with when I took over, Jim Grabowski.
Yeah.
It was interesting because the first game, football game I did for Illinois, and I'd like I said, I'd been doing high school football for a few years, but I hadn't done it in a while. It had mm-hmm. been a few years since when I was with the Angels and coming back. And the first game of the 2000 football season, Jim wasn't feeling good. He was having some health issues at the time. And so I had literally just gotten back from California, I don't know, 5 months earlier, mm-hmm. whatever, in April or May. And the first game was at San Diego State.
Yeah.
So I go out there, and they say, well, we'll have you fill in for Jim. And, you know, it was like, well, it's been a while since I've done a football game, but absolutely, I'm going to do this.
Right.
And I did okay. I mean, I thought it was okay. And I could have done better, but I was doing the best I can. One, I was scared to death because I was, you know, taking over, filling in for, you know, a guy who had been doing it for a long time.
Right.
And two, working with Jim Grabowski and wanting to do a good job. And so, you know, it was – and the San Diego State wore these awful uniforms. You couldn't read the numbers.
Right.
I mean, it was kind of pieced together.
Yeah.
But they loved it. They thought it sounded good, and they, you know, I think they were impressed with my approach to calling the game. And by my standards, it wasn't what I thought it should be, but it was okay.
Yeah. But I will say that's how you know you're better than most is when you don't think it's, you know, like when you're yourself, when you see yourself, you don't think it's very good, but everybody else thinks it's good. So, like, your level is higher than everybody else's in your mind. You know what I mean? Because, like if you do something and they're like, I don't think I did very good, but everybody else thought it was really good, then that's how you know you're one of the best.
So, and I wasn't, you know, I just was trying to hang in there and do the best I could on that. I filled in for Jim a couple other times that year for over the couple of years, and then a couple basketball games here and there.
Yeah.
And then when he retired, then, of course, Grabowski did the football with me for a few years. And then he retired, and then we looked about, I think it was about 07, somewhere in there, right before the Rose Bowl year, maybe right ahead of it, I guess.
Yeah.
Grabowski stepped down, and so then we went, did some searching, and then they interviewed some people, and we hired Howard Griffith.
Right.
And so Howard was hired. We announced it. Howard Griffith's our new color guy, and then 2 weeks later he got hired by the Big Ten.
Right.
And, of course, he's still there.
Yes.
All these years later. And then Kittner was kind of our other candidate that we came in the final two or three.
Yeah, I thought I enjoyed listening to him. I mean, I thought he did a really good job.
Mm-hmm. So he was good. It brought a quarterback perspective, you know, and had a lot of success. And
I didn't realize that Howard Griffith got it first. Yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah, he had it first. Had about 2 weeks.
Yeah,
and then Kittner did it for several years, and then he wanted to step aside be with his family. He had a young family. And then Martin O'Donnell had been doing the post-game call-in show, excuse me, on our local station here at WDWS, and so he'd been on the air for several years. So it was kind of a no-brainer, like, okay, we got a guy right here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it. And, of course, over the last 9 years, he's been spectacular doing the games with me. But now he's reached the point Kurt did where it was like, hey, I want to spend some time with my family on Saturdays. And so We'll start looking here soon,
and we
got some names in mind of people that I think would be good to consider, and whether they can do it or not, or what their schedule allows is a whole other matter. But basically, what I've tried to you asked your original question about how I basically have worked with my color commentators is, you know, I'll tell you the what, where, and when.
Mm-hmm.
You tell me the how and why.
Right.
You know how this is working, why this is working, why it's not working.
Yeah.
And just kind of start there.
But will you, Mike, meet with them and do, like, do you guys do, like, a trial run, you know? Do you call things beforehand? Or is, like, the first game of the year, will that be the first time you guys have done a game together? Or do you practice beforehand? Or is
no, not really. Yeah, I mean, the only practice there might be is, a spring game.
Right, yeah.
You know, where you kind of get a feel for it, which is not really a game, but it's, you know, enough action to kind of give you a feel for each other. But, no, first game, we were ready to go.
Right.
And I think, I mean, Martin I knew he would do well. And he just grew into, you know, an outstanding color guy. But I just divvied up like that. Same way with basketball. You know, when I was with Jerry Hester and then Dion and Doug and you know, you just tell me, you guys played at this level.
Right.
I didn't. I don't know what it's like to be in the huddle. I don't know what it's like to be blocking a 300-pound defensive end. I have no idea.
Right.
But they do. Martin does. You know, Kurt Kittner, I had no idea what it's like to have a blitz coming at you.
Mm-hmm.
But he did.
Yeah.
So he can explain the game, the how and the why, so much better than I can.
Right.
I mean, I've watched football my whole life. I get the sport, but I don't know the intricacies of the middle of a heated battle like they do. Trying to get them to try and trying to help them and what basically – have them explain to the fans in a way that's understandable that here's what happened and here's why.
Like being up against a break, though, just things like that, does it take somebody time just to, well, because, well, this is more TV, I think, but, you know, somebody will be in their ear, like, you got 15 seconds to say what you're going to say, and then we got to go, you know, things like that. Like, does that take time to get used to and things like that? Like,
well, you get practiced at it, but right. it's, you know that there's going to be certain, when the guy with the red hat comes out, there's a timeout.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to wrap it up.
Yeah.
TV's a little different animal because the producer in the truck is in charge.
Right.
On the radio, you're in charge.
Yeah.
There's a little difference. Yes, there's a little difference. But, you know, obviously, you know that our engineer, you know, Ed Bond for years, you know, will watch the red hat guy. And when he comes out, he'll tell you, let's take a break.
Yeah.
You know, and so you go to break.
Right.
TV, there's like a hard.
Yes.
You know, they're counting down. They're showing video. They're showing a highlight. And they're going to break. And you're done. So you'll be. On TV, you'll have, and I've done some work for BTN over the years, several years ago now, but, you know, you have a producer in your ear counting down, 5, 4, while you're finishing your sentence, you're hearing a guy talk in your ear.
But radio,
you don't have that. It's just you. No, it's just you. I mean, you're the guy.
You're the boss. So. Yeah. Because, even the Super Bowl, just this past year, Romo's catching a little heat for talking through that last, you know, just things like that.
Yeah.
I wondered if that was...
Yeah,
something that ever happens. But okay, let's see here. I've done the Anaheim stuff. See my chicken scratch here.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. when here, I was going to ask too. Okay, this is what I was going to ask you. There's a caveat to this question though. I wanted like a couple of your. I'll just have you say two favorite. Games, moments, whatever, calling Illinois basketball, but you're not allowed to use the 05 season, and you're not allowed to use the Tyler Griffey layup.
Okay. Other than those two?
Right. So what would you say? It could be a game, a call, a moment, or whatever it is, but maybe give me a couple of your favorites with the basketball.
With basketball?
Yeah.
Well, let me think. I would say... 05
is just way too easy.
Yeah, 05 is way too easy. Final Four was unbelievable. The Louisville game and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, you got to call a national championship game.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
I would say some of those early years with Bill Self, going to Maui, I think those have been really cool.
Yeah.
I've been out to Maui 4 times now. That tournament is awesome, doing games from there. It's interesting because you're doing a game in the middle of the day, and it's like 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock back home.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a fun sensation. I've been able to, you know, we did games in Padre Island. We've done games in Las Vegas. I remember a game in, I forget what year it was, 01, 02, somewhere in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
I was filling in for Jim. Illinois was playing in a high school gym. Greg Maddox's old high school, I think, Las Vegas. Big, big high school gym, but tournament was in there, and we made it to the championship game against Southern Illinois, and Bruce Weber was coaching Southern Illinois.
I think I remember that.
And I think Sean Harrington hit a big shot in that game, and we won. I just remember thinking, who's this coach out there that won't stay off the floor?
Yeah.
And it was Bruce Weber.
Yeah.
And of course, later we wound up, you know, working with him and being friends with him. So that was interesting to do. I think the Big Ten championship game against, or the game we won the Big Ten title against Iowa.
That's
probably just that whole day was surreal with, Nebraska, the last place team, taking out Wisconsin in Madison, totally unexpected. And then the rest of the afternoon, it was like a explosion of energy, you know, as people saw that result. And then knowing if you could beat Iowa, you could win a share of the Big Ten. That whole day was pretty surreal. So
yeah,
I remember that and the rushing of the court and COVID for a different reason. We did, of course, the home games we did in an empty arena.
Yeah.
Road games we did calling them off a TV screen at Bielefeld.
Does that feel like, I don't know. Sometimes to me it feels like that was 20 years ago. But other times it feels like, I don't know. But
yeah, I wouldn't want to do that again.
You guys were talking, I think, one of the things when I was looking you up, researching a little bit, there was a YouTube one where it was you and Dion, and I think it was his pod actually or something. But you guys, it was right in right after all that. Because I remember you talking about Plummer. So it would have been like, what, 20? It was the year that Io's left. Cabrera was supposed to be a sophomore, I think. Yeah. So whatever, you know. But you guys were talking about that. And my brain can't even go back to that hardly, just thinking about everything being empty and, you know, so I can't imagine.
That was hard.
Calling games.
Yeah. Calling game off of TV is not ideal.
Yeah.
But we did. Now, we made the best we could out of it, and I thought.
And we were good, so it's like.
It was a good team.
Really important games.
Yeah.
With no noise, it's just.
Yeah. No noise. What we tried to do is we were able to, the engineers that would work for the teams we were playing would send us an audio feed.
Yeah.
And even though there was no crowd, there was some noise. And whatever, if there was a place that had a crowd or a very small crowd, you'd at least have some crowd noise.
Yeah.
And they would pipe in crowd noise, basically.
Yeah.
Which made it sound realistic enough that we were actually there.
Right.
And I had several people that year that said, I didn't know you weren't there.
Yeah.
That you weren't in Michigan or you weren't in wherever.
Right. Which is good. But
which is good, but yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah.
The people actually working it, I can't imagine.
Jim Turpin told me that year, he said, don't get too good at that, or that's what they'll want to do.
True.
Going forward. So
yeah.
So yeah, I would want to live through that again.
Yeah, and it was just bizarre. I remember sitting there, and we were rolling pretty good there that year that the tournament got canceled, and
yeah,
probably would have had a 5-6 seed somewhere in there, but we're playing well. And
that was a great game too. The Kofi block on Garza at the end of the game.
Yeah, that was great. And the one. Well, here, I got a question coming up where I'll bring this guy up. But, yeah, that year was bizarre. But real quick, too, I just thought about this. So, like a game, because you're busy traveling. Let's say, so you guys, you're going to Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. So, like, what's a day, like, leading up to a game look like for you? Like, are you, what time do you get this? Just, like, honestly, your kind of routine, like, on a game day, like, on the road. So just when you get there and prep and all that kind of good stuff. But
yeah. Well, my prep, like for we got a game with Wisconsin this weekend.
I'm assuming football is much more thorough.
Yeah, football is much more thorough.
Yes.
Basketball, it takes me 2 to 3 hours to get a score sheet ready.
Yeah.
I've already been working on Wisconsin this week, so I'm already ahead. In fact, I've printed off material for Purdue.
Yeah.
So I try to work about a game ahead.
Right.
The Minnesota game, of course, is just completed, so – but I've got my Wisconsin score sheet about half done already.
Yeah.
Just looking up, you know, every team has game notes, and so I've gone through online all of Wisconsin's notes and made notes on each of their players and all the guys they have. So I'm basically over half done.
Yeah.
I'll go home today and get ready. Tomorrow we leave. I think our flight's at 5-something.
Yeah.
And it's only about a 45-minute flight to Madison.
Right.
So we'll go up there. This year, not every coach has done it this way, and it varies year to year. But, you know, this year they'll go from the airport to the arena, get everybody off the bus, put up a few shots, nothing really organized other than just shoot.
Yeah.
And then they'll pack up, go back to the hotel, and have a team dinner. They'll watch their film. I've watched some of that. It's interesting.
Are you around the – team while this is going on?
Yeah, in the same, in the dining room watching film with them.
So you get to hear coach.
Yeah. talk about, you know, they have all the players, you know, talking about the scouting report and what guy does well and what he doesn't do well and so forth. And then they'll, that's it for dinner and they'll wrap it up for the night. And then the next day, depending on the time of the game, usually the visiting team gets to shoot around first.
Yeah.
So if it's a 6 o'clock game, you might get to shoot around at 11 a.m. So you go back over. They'll do their final scouting report prep, what they call a walkthrough, basically, shoot around.
Yep.
Brad Underwood's are different than most teams. His are a little more full tilt.
Are they?
Other coaches would walk through, walk through what the other team runs.
Yeah.
If you're at a really early game, sometimes they'll have to do the walkthrough in a ballroom at the hotel, where they put down the free throw line and the lane and walk through the plays that the other team's going to run to kind of get a last-minute scouting report.
I was a varsity coach, and one time I had to use the library. I was moving desks around for the other team and stuff.
Yeah.
Just whatever they'll give you.
And so sometimes you have to do that. We had to do that at Tennessee. The game was early, Tennessee time this last year and this season. So we didn't really get to shoot around. That was one of the few times we haven't been able to at least get to the arena.
That didn't have anything to do with Tennessee?
I mean, you got us
not getting to shoot before the game.
No, it's just the home team has a certain time they're going to shoot, right, and you're kind of at the mercy of what time they want to do it.
Gotcha.
So you try to work on it. Like when teams come to Champaign.
No gamesmanship or anything.
Well, when the teams come to State Farm Center, they usually shoot in the morning. Right. Like Minnesota would have shot, whatever that was, Wednesday morning, and we shoot in the afternoon. So, I mean, the home team sets the
– right.
Yeah. You know, whatever the home team, the home team's going to wear the uniform, well, then the other team reacts accordingly. Mm-hmm. So there's an advantage to being at home for sure. But then, you know, like in Wisconsin, and we'll do the shoot around and go back 4 hours. They always eat 4 hours before every game.
Mm-hmm.
Before that meal, interview Underwood will come down. We'll do our pregame interview.
Right.
I usually interview an assistant coach, Chester or Jeff or Tyler Underwood or whoever's doing the scout for that day.
You guys always talk to the – usually talk to the radio guy from the other
– to the radio guy from the other team. That can either be live or taped depending on how long their show is.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, kind of work on all that and then sit down. And our local pregame here in Champaign on our two stations here starts 2 hours before game, and then our network pregame starts an hour. And
gotcha. Yeah.
And then you tip off and you go.
There you're off to the races.
Yeah.
Can you put your fan hat on for just a second?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you have a, let's say you have a Mount Rushmore of your favorite Illinois players, basketball players. If they have to be before you, we're calling games, so you're not showing any, whatever favoritism or it can be or whatever. But
I know I can.
And then I might give mine too. See if we got any.
Yeah, well, early because I went to games early when I was a kid. Nick Weatherspoon was probably my favorite player.
Yeah,
growing up in the early 70s, I mean, I thought he was fantastic. Eddie Johnson was a favorite.
Yeah.
Of course, hit the game-winning shot against Michigan State, and I was there for that, was in the stands. Derek Harper was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
Of course, the Flying Illini, any of those guys are a favorite. Kendall Gill, Nick Anderson particularly, I think.
Yeah.
You know, Dion was a favorite, of course, and getting to work with him now.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Kaufman. I thought was a really fun player to watch.
Yeah.
Jerry Hester, who I also wound up working with, I thought was a fun player. You get into the, you know, Brian Cook was fabulous. Lucas Johnson was a whole lot of fun to watch.
That group had lots of guys.
They had a lot of guys that were really good. That's the
Arizona game.
Yeah, the Elite Eight team gets overlooked a lot, how good they were, because they were really good.
Yes.
And then, of course, anybody on the 05 team, you know, Darren and Dee and Luther and Roger and James, I mean, they were that team is unique unto itself. I would say DJ Richardson was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
Nana Egwu was an interesting player. I always enjoyed his work ethic and how hard he worked. Trying to think. And then, of course, the current guys. I mean, Sincere Harris is a funny, you know, great sense of humor, young man, always a big smile.
Right.
Enjoy being around him.
And he's gonna have to really cut in there next year.
Yeah, too. Yeah. I think Quincy Guerrier's just got a young child. He's a fun guy to be around. Marcus DeMass, Luke Goody. It's a good group. This group has the – since the 05 team – is the most connected offensively I've seen.
Yeah,
and I think the Ken Pom and all the efficiency numbers kind of show that.
Right.
But off the court, too, this team really likes each other.
Yeah.
There have been years where guys tolerated each other.
Yeah, recently.
And tolerated. And even in the team that won the Big Ten, you know, it was a struggle that year because we had guys hurt.
Mm-hmm.
We had, you know, there was no flow to anything.
Right.
And to Brad Underwood's credit, you know, he pieced together a Big Ten champion out of all that. Right. So, but this year, this group they really enjoy each other. They have a lot of fun together.
Yeah.
It kind of shows up on the court, I think.
Right. As far from a fan's perspective, this group, I've liked some, you know, a lot but they're old and experienced and pretty mature we could talk about this team forever. But some of mine, Darren's my favorite. And I like that team. I love that team, obviously, but Darren was, you know, I like those one the guys that just kind of let their play do their talking. Yep. And he was just kind of a quiet, but put his foot on your throat and kind of a killer, you know. But he also quiet type too, you know. Yeah. Just and it was obvious that he was what made that team go because he was the third pick of the draft next year, you know.
Right.
But also, Hester is legit on my Mount Rushmore of all time because my first memory of him, he was a senior. I was a freshman, but the Topper, do you remember the Topper Classic in Danville? Like, they used to have this Topper Classic, and it was like Chicago Farragut, Chicago King, Peoria Emanuel.
Okay.
And there was a Class A division and a Double A division, but this was in the mid-90s. This is, you weren't around at that time, but Peoria Emanuel was in it, and they were playing Chicago King, and Chicago King had that Rashard Griffith and Thomas Hamilton. They're both over 7 feet, and Hester did the spin move on the baseline and dunked on one of them and just jogged back down the floor like nothing happened, you know, and I was just like, that's my guy. And he's another one who's just was great but quiet. And then from the another guy that was one of my favorites is Felice. I loved him.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a good one too.
Yes. He's one that I really wish would have had a chance to play in the tournament, but it was that year that, you know, when COVID happened and there was a tournament. But I thought that every good team needs a guy like that, you know.
Yeah. I thought we had a team that could have made our deep run that year.
Yeah, and it was a lot of it was him, you know, just intangibles. And he's a guy I wish would, you know, he seems like somebody that could be a coach, you know, maybe when he gets done playing. But Hester, though, those old Topper Classics, Kevin Garnett was in them, and we were in the Class A division, and we played. They moved us up to play Manuel my sophomore junior year, or junior, no, sophomore junior year. But I got Sergio McClain guarding me, you know. I'm just, and I was about a buck 60, and like, coach, I can't get open very well, but it was really cool. But that whole thing back then was a amazing thing. But Hester, Darren Williams, Felice, and then anybody from Flying Illini, probably Kenny Battle.
Sure.
Yeah.
No, that's a good list.
Yeah. I was left-handed, so was he.
Yeah.
So. Okay, last question, and then I'll let you go here. Let's say you can call any sports, any venue. You're the play-by-play guy. You can have any color analysts, dead or alive. What would the game be, and who would you pick to call it with you?
Yeah, that's – wow. You're, There we go.
Well, whatever, we got cut off. But the actual this won't get cut off. But the
all right, boy, that's hard. Have a color guy. I wouldn't mind doing a game with Troy Aikman, for instance. I think he'd be.
Yeah, he's great.
I think he'd be great. One particular place I've never been or place.
No,
I,
I'm just a game. I mean, like the. Like if a Super Bowl or national championship.
Oh, probably a World Series game or a big game like that, probably, I would think.
Is there somebody, if you're calling a World Series color analyst that you
Steve Stone, maybe.
Yeah.
I think that'd be fun.
He had to keep
fun,
Perry in line all those years. So,
he did. I think that'd be a good one.
Speaking of guys, I was thinking of him whenever you're talking about having conversation in between pitches and stuff. You know, that made me think of Harry Carey. But,
yeah,
Steve Stone's great. But
yeah. And I actually have done games, minor league games, with Joe Buck.
Oh, really?
Yeah, back when he was in Louisville, he was the number two announcer there as a young guy,
just
coming up. And so I was doing the games by myself then in Oklahoma City. And
really?
We traveled to Louisville, and I had 9 innings to fill, and so I'd have Joe come down and sit in with me, and we'd do innings together.
Really?
So,
that's great.
So that was fun. That's a pretty cool memory.
Oh, yeah.
He's done well.
Yeah. Well, and that wasn't a – nepotism situation. That was just, he's great.
Oh, he's good.
His dad's
great.
I
thought at the time, although it didn't matter if people think that's what it is.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
He's just really good.
Yeah, those two are great, but been spoiled as Cardinal fans having great.
Yeah.
And, good segue, we're spoiled as Illinois fans to have you calling games. So,
I appreciate that.
I've told my wife, I'm always worried you're going to get out of here and go do something national, but for now, like, we just got to appreciate having you. So,
I appreciate that very much, and I grew up here, so this is, you know, the Illini are my team. That's a little different than coming in, you know. When I had a great time in Anaheim, but I didn't know much about the Angels before I went out there. I mean, it was like, oh, okay, well, this is the team I'm for now. But the Illinois thing runs really, really deep, and I'm getting older now, so I'm, you know, national aspirations. If I was going to be hired nationally, that would have happened 10 years ago.
Right, yeah.
You know, I'm getting – now they're, you know, the Jason Benettis, who's a terrific broadcaster.
Yeah, he is.
And, you know, Connor Onion does some games now. He's an up-and-comer.
Yeah.
And what's fun about those guys is – and I'm so happy for them because – those were guys that sent me their work to listen to.
Oh, really?
To be critiqued.
Awesome. Yeah.
You know, and I've watched them, you know, kind of gave them some advice.
Full circle.
And they were gonna do well anyway, but it was, you know, it's cool to know them at that level and then have them kind of blossom into really good broadcasters. And so that's
it's very cool.
I get a lot of satisfaction out of that.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. This was great.
Hey, you're welcome. Yeah. Thank you.
And again, this is I hope that maybe we can, you know, like me, like I told you, I was trying to, when I first started doing this, you know, like I kind of wanted to make the where I am at kind of a destination for people to come. But I'm like, I will pick up and go anywhere to talk to you. And this is good because I need to start doing this kind of stuff. Take it on the road a little bit and go to people. So, yeah, this was a lot of fun. But
well, good.
Thank you very much. Like I said, we're Illinois fans are all just thrilled to have you. So I will do our sign-off line. My son, he was like 5 whenever I started this, and I told him, I'm like, what should my sign-off line be? Sign-off line be. So, and he said, that's that. I'm like, all right, that's what I'll do. So Brian Barnhart, thank you very, very much
You're
for
welcome.
Coming on. And for Welcome to Heath Barn, that's that.